You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome back to another episode of Out of the Blank. I'm here with Jill, what's up? Oh my goodness. You have a lot of things going on right now. Mostly with the audio drama. So what can you give me the lowdown about what's going on? Cause I'm super excited because whatever it is, it looks amazing. I know it was amazing before, but now you're really starting to get a lot of steam with it. I'm seeing a lot of production stuff going on with it as well too. Did it get picked up or something?
No, not really. It's very exciting. There are a couple of things going on. One project just finished, which was I was contacted by a lady in Brisbane who is also a lady of a certain age who writes audio drama. And she asked if I would become involved in an international project, which was a number of authors all writing something around a murder mystery, which is really popular. People love murder mysteries, don't they? And we were each to write about how somebody might have murdered a very unpopular person, shall we say, somebody who was involved in drugs and weapons trafficking and abuse of women. And this person was called Donald T. Johnson. And we were all supposed to have plotted to murder him. And so all of these plays, I think there are 10 of them, maybe 11 of them, all of them were around how a plot might be hatched to kill this person in different ways. And if you listen to them all, you've got to try and work out who it was that you think actually did it and how they did it.
That's like a movie. Whoa. Well, okay, so you're writing one play out of the 10, I would say.
I wrote one, yeah.
Okay, what is yours? Does yours go on the basis of the same kind of audio drama style that you like to do, or is it something you had to step out of your comfort zone to do?
It wasn't too far out of my comfort zone, except that all of this was done while we were still in lockdown. Mm-hmm. And so it was difficult. You know that I like to record with actors in a studio rather than remotely. I prefer that. Couldn't do that. So what I did was wrote a play for one actor, which was myself, because that was all I had. And so I wrote a play where it's not a monologue because there's dialogue going on, that the person speaks by phone. She speaks into her tape journal. We hear her conversing with other people, but mostly we only hear her. We only really hear her. So we hear her side of the conversation all the way through. And that meant that I could record it myself. And with the right soundscape, it hopefully comes across as realistic. It's called The Escort.
That comes off a little bit of promiscuous intent when you say escort.
That's right.
Oh, goodness. So I want to pick your brain on production scenarios for you, only because I've been starting to, like, the podcast come up to 1,000, and I was trying to figure out like what I would, maybe if I wanted to keep it going or if I wanted to try something, my hand at something else. And I've been trying to look at documentaries, for instance. Now, I pitched a TV show to a guest of mine who's became a friend. His name's TJ. He's the host of Skinwalker Ranch, which is that aliens kind of show on the History Channel. And me and him were able to bond over how we hate the BBC. In honor of you, Jill. But I was talking to him about analyzing people's dreams, because I think a dream is so specific to one certain person that experiences it, that the catch of the show is the fact that it's going to be new. Much like every horror show or every movie, it's still enticing to watch, not only of capturing a killer, even though the story might be exactly the same. All the Halloweens, for instance, they're all the same. It's a franchise of movies, but they do it differently. And there's just, it's a new experience, which I think is why people like it. Now, hopefully they like the movie when it gets done, or, you know, however they feel about it. But I think a dream scenario, for instance, if I asked you, what's one dream that you've had or one dream that you remember where you felt like it lingered with you, like one that's deep in your roots, I would say.
Mine is a recurring one and comes around from time to time. It's not particularly scary, but I'm always in a big house, and the house is so big that I don't know my way around it. So I don't know where all the rooms are. So I keep finding different rooms, new rooms. And sometimes the house belongs to me, quite often it belongs to me. And so I'm planning what I'm going to do with all these rooms, but I keep finding more rooms, and I can wake up planning color schemes and how to arrange the house and so on. So that happens to me quite often.
Do you know what what you've tried to pull out of it would be?
I think because it's not, occasionally it's a bit frustrating. You mean what I've pulled out of it as a meaning for me?
Yeah, like, have you tried to decipher what that is? Because I'm already thinking that you really like when something leads on to something else. Like when you're able to, you know, for instance, let's take the audio drama. When you create something, that initial creation, it might be the end of that story, but it leads into another part, kind of like a sequel. There's always a little bit more than the base layer of what people can see, is what I'm starting to think.
Yep, I think that's true. I also think that I see life as full of opportunities, and I'm not going to have time to explore them all. So I'll probably never be able to get to the end of the things that I'd like to do, you know, so deep sea diving, learning to fly a plane, lots of things that I have done that I wanted to do, but probably I'll run out of time before I get to do all of them. That's how I see it, that the house is just so many opportunities, you just can't possibly get to the end of it.
Do you want to go skydiving or deep sea fishing or deep sea diving?
I'd like, yeah, probably. Yeah.
I always wonder because people list off things off their bucket list. And I'm like, but do you want to do those? No, I don't want to do any of those. It's like, then why are they listed on your bucket list? Well, that's the common bucket list item. And I think, see, I'm telling you, this should be a show. It's just people's dreams. And every dream, there's an animation of that dream. And I think it would be something, because you never know where that's going to lead to. And you start to realize, like, you know, through dreams or through ever, what you want to call self-reflection while you're asleep is basically what it is. And I think it has some critical kind of keyholes into life in a way. And I think the more you can learn, or especially with a reoccurring one, the more that it keeps happening over and over again, there has to be a reason why, because usually dreams are supposed to be different every time. Yeah, I'm thinking the audio drama thing is because if you start looking at a concept of that, there's always more to discover. And through, you know, much like, you know, is being an author or being someone that creates something is kind of leaving a little bit of mystery, but also little trail crumbs for the next story to come through.
And there are always stories, and your mind is full of stories. So that when people say, where do you get your ideas from? The ideas are just coming at you all the time. And the trick is in choosing which ones you follow. Because then you don't have time to follow up all those stories. You've got to focus on, in my case, I've got to focus on one at a time. And so the others are all there waiting in the wings. Which one are you going to pick next?
You have a lot of notes or anything when it comes to creating something? Do you ever feel like you have so much going on, like your mind's on one thing, then it goes to another thing, then it goes to another thing, that you have to kind of keep tabs on all of them, even though it might be so hard to focus in on one? Or do you find that it's easier for you to focus in on one and kind of ignore the others?
I think probably my professional training has allowed me to do that, because I've had to work on one project at a time, even though there might be 12 others waiting in the wings. So I think I'm quite good at focusing on one project at a time, but I could be collecting information about other possibilities as I see them. So I might be, you know, ordering books or noting websites that offer future possibilities. when I'm actually writing a play, though, I'm only concentrating on that one play. I don't think I'd be able to spread my energies. Maybe I could, but I don't think so.
I started to examine more of the value that not only we give ourselves, but the value that we take information. And I've noticed that me saying something that might be deep or might be kind of quotable, I would say, you know, you can put in a book, it's not going to ring to anybody unless there's a certain age in it or there's a certain nameable face that is attached to it. Which is interesting because every like Nirvana poster you see or every Kurt Cobain reference, they say Kurt Cobain said this. It's like, that's a Yoda quote. And you just put it on Kurt Cobain's face. You didn't actually say that. You start leading into this aspect of when we deem something as value, it's not really taken into full effect basis on what that or who that person is. And I think a really good show, not even a dream show, but a show that has, you could add it with the dream one. It's just someone like you, someone like me, someone like an average day person. Of course, we're above average in some way, sure. But we look at concepts of things that we can say or things of information that can just be our thoughts, and they can really hold value to something that goes with that. But people technically don't really want to consider that unless it's like Kanye West. Now, Kanye West says a lot of things. They're not really quotable book stuff, but people accept it because he's famous and he's rich and he's obviously made himself into something. Where I wonder, maybe as society, we deem value in a different way. And I think discerning value is probably the least valuable thing about us. It's not about which value we hold higher, but it's about never letting value slip through our fingertips. And I think that's important. Certain things that I've gotten from you, certain things that I've gotten from other past guests who might not have a TV show or might not have a spotlight or something, have been some of the most critical advice or critical thoughts that I've ever really, that still stick with me. I think because it has value. And I think value necessarily isn't with a brand. It's with the person who is saying those words. And I think consideration is the main key, because you consume what that person says, no matter who they are. And I think that needs to be brought in somehow. I'm wondering if I can. So if I'm making a documentary, I'm not saying I am, but if I am, I want to try and find a way where I can, much like Out of the Blank is out of the blank, it's out of nothing. And I want to put my personality into it to where you don't know what's going on, but you're receiving something, whether that's laugh, whether that's a confusion, whether that's, it's highlighting the true essence of value. And I think you get that with Quentin Tarantino films. Somehow you watch a Quentin Tarantino film with amidst all the bloodshed and all the cursing, you're getting some information out of it. You're getting something. You're understanding plot holes and conflicts and themes and resolutions all in a mass scale where it only lasts 3 hours, but you've somehow felt like you've discovered a whole day.
Do you find sometimes that people come back to you from your show and say, well, you said this and it really struck me?
Sometimes.
But
I think
that's what I think you're talking about.
I think mostly I get something, mostly like if I look from my beginning first episode to where I'm at now, there's just so much information and different perspectives where my mind is going even more than I thought it ever would. But I think when we discern value, I started to look at things that I hear on popular shows that might be funny or might be something. They're not wrong in what they do or how they get across, but I also look at lesser name shows. Mostly I have a couple friends who do they're just started a podcast and I'm listening to them. I'm like, they say some really good things, but it's just about, they don't have the presence on social media. They don't have, I don't have a presence on social media as much as people want you to have, but I can't invest my time into its consumption. And I think when you're creating work, for instance, now there are people that have an audio drama that will get a live performance or get something going for them and that sort, all because they're good at manipulating social media. But what about people like yourself that are very good at writing and creating and making a story and making something with deeper value and context, but necessarily aren't understanding the social media game. Maybe that leads into an app. I'm not saying you're bad at social media. I'm just saying it's freaking tricky for me. And I don't even like doing it because it seems like I'll post on Facebook, but then it's like, got to post on Facebook, got to have a link tree, got to have an Instagram, got to have a Snapchat, got to have all this. And I'm like, what happened to the era of content creation where I could submit something and someone would find value or would get placed in a direct all where people could all see it? Now you're telling me I have to put it on 50,000. There's always a new podcast app. I can't stay up on them all. I'm like, I'm on Google. What does that mean? Are you on Amazon? I'm on Amazon, I think. Check. I'm on Amazon. Apparently I'm a book writer on there. I'm like, okay, sure. But there's so much and there's always new things being created in the same essence of what it was before or what another is. It's hard to stay on top of it all. So I start trying to understand that when I hear a director talk about how the industry has changed, you don't want to get into this business anymore. Past guest, he had two Emmys sitting on his back of his, on a cardboard box in the background while we were talking. I'm like, are those Emmys? He goes, yeah, once you get them, you understand they don't mean anything. They're just a spot. Like, oh, like, but everyone wants to aspire to get one. He goes, not people that have one. He's like, it's like the Olympics, the award you win, the gold. Then afterwards you go back to your Panera job. Nobody cares about you only for that minute of fame. That's what you want, is that recognition in front of everybody. And you start to wonder would I be happier in a setting than I am in right now? Or would I be happier creating a show in a setting where I sit in an office? But I think where I would be happy is not feeling like I'm owned by anybody and letting free creativity and expression ensue. You know, if I told you I want an audio drama on this, that gives you free range to act out however you wanted to on that style that I wanted. But if I told you it needs to be like this with this, 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 and you can't do this, you have to do this. Now you're now the sword for basically my words. You're not yourself. You lost your individuality. And so many people fall down to that, I guess, I wouldn't say bowing, but suppression of another person, all because they fund the aspects which dampens your creativity, which might be the trade or the bargain in question. But wouldn't you just accept someone's value and interpretation of how they would truly wish to create it? I'm making you think. Really, I'm interested. Sorry.
I'm really interested in it. It sounds to me as though you're ready to go in a slightly different direction. And all of this questioning is going to help you to find the direction that you want to go in. Because I agree with you that I've never in my lifetime experienced a phenomenon like social media. And it's interesting to say that you feel lost in it because, you know, your generation has just grown up with it. You know, you can imagine how lost people like me feel about it. And one of the difficulties I have is that some of the people who might enjoy my work are literally saying, well, what is a podcast? So you say, well, I write drama and, you know, I podcast it. Well, you know, what is a podcast? Where do I find it? And so we've got this huge amount of information that's going around that some people are overwhelmed by it. Some people seem to float on top of it. Do they really? I don't know. And some people just turn away from it and say, no, that's nothing to do with me. That I don't even look at that. And that's never happened before. That phenomenon has never, ever occurred before. So how do we handle that? I don't know how we handle that. And it seems to me that a lot of your questions are about, well, where do I take this that you've got out of the blank, which is a successful podcast, which you obviously enjoy doing. Where do you take that next? And I can't see you operating as anything other than an independent.
That's the thing, is when I started thinking about like a show design or something that's created, because I think there's a large aspect of being connected to the people that might get you a little bit of success. If you look at writers on a show, a lot of them know each other. Adam Sandler has probably the best template for his movies. A lot of his movies are people that he knows that he's done films with before because he knows the template works. But the open door policy when it comes to giving people who might not have a start a chance. That's a very, very rare thing, mostly because it's hard to understand or have faith in potential of somebody. And I think when we look at that, we look at that as a risk. And I don't necessarily think that's a risk. You know, I think that's something I'm hoping one day you're going to have like a GoFundMe or something so I can donate some money to you to get your audio drama really, because it has so much potential and it's doing a lot, but it's better than some of the crap on the BBC. I'm sorry. I've talked to people from the, if you just type in BBC or type in Jill, it's going to show you a bunch of episodes where I've mentioned you and I've completely trashed the BBC. We don't like them. We don't talk about them. It's okay. But
I'll never publish me now.
We're going to beat them. But I think there's an open door for creativity, because the word creativity, when I say that to you, what does that word mean? What do you think of?
I think of people. I think of ideas. I think of a thousand ways to express those ideas. It's such a broad word, isn't it? It's performance art, it's music, it's, oh God, it's any medium that you can think of, and some we haven't thought of yet. So, but it's a spark that has to come from the mind of a human being who sees things in a way or hears things in a way that the rest of us haven't cottoned onto. And so they present something to us that we didn't imagine for ourselves. Is that right? Does that sound really pretentious? If I go and look at a beautiful painting or a painting that says something to me, you know, I can't paint that thing, but somebody else has communicated that spark of humanity, has communicated through their painting to me. Communication, I suppose I think of it as communication.
Creativity to me, I imagine the Bob Ross kind of paint in his arm where all the different colors are, his little easel thing where he's able to take paint from that and put it onto the canvas. Because I look at the word entrepreneur, and we think of business most of the time. For me, it's business. It's not really starting a company. It's just a business. Company's business to me. But I've started to see how that door has started to close. The pandemic really started up a lot of entrepreneurs. The podcast started up a lot more during the pandemic as well, too. But I've watched corporations shut down businesses during the pandemic as well, and really shut down people's opportunities of being an entrepreneur, as much as before the pandemic, everybody was away from it. And then they're like, come over here, it's an open platform. No, it was never. They just disguised it as that. I don't want creativity to get to that point where people can't feel like they can't express themselves through something because it's going to be difficult, or it's going to get to a point where it's closed off. Because I think you can find value in anything, literally any. I've seen paintings sell for $7 million that do not look like $7 million paintings. But to that person, whoever, if they had money to spend, they did it and they made $7 million from it. Now that person is a $7 million artist. So I think the concept of art is subjective, and creativity is subjective as well too. Then whatever someone deems as value, who listens or watches or likes the thing that you created, no matter the size of those people, even one is the same value as if it was 100. And I think the perspective of that is something that necessarily does not get thought about. Mostly it's about the numbers of people. I hate analytics for that specific reason. I hate when they tell you how many people listen to each episode and listen to your show and how many plays that you have. It feels good when it's a high number, but you're not incentivizing people to care more than about the number of times it gets played. How about if someone out there has gotten something from it? Okay, then we'll add a like bar. Yeah, but then you add the dislike bar because you don't want them to get too overinflated ego, right? Well, what are you incentivizing more than just people wanting to compete or people wanting to constantly judge themselves on the basis of the content that they create? I think if you really truly believe that art is subjective, then art is creativity, then creativity is subjective. So the value that gets withheld inside of it should be something that should be more free than something that you label under a like or a dislike.
What would be your criteria for success?
Oof. My mind wants to say billions of people loving you at every moment, but my heart tells me that the value of people that know my name necessarily shouldn't be judged on the many, but should be judged on the few, because the few who will truly remember the person of who you are and who you stood for are going to be remembered for the rest of their lives. You know, history's written in a very strange way. History's been written by the winner, but the people that have excelled through history, not on the basis, you know, war, sure, we all know wars, but do you remember the people specifically? Does every child or every person who's ever learned about it in school 30, 20 years ago remember the person who led that war? Besides, like, General Custer gets brought in. But no, you know who you do remember? The person who had an idea that decided to write down a quote or try and change the mind from the basic, who thought that he might excel more than the few. And that quote gets stamped on every single poster and accidentally might get chalked up to Kurt Cobain, sure. But Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, these people who had an idea or a thought that thought differently than the normal. There's a large amount of people that want to be different from the rest of the world. But in the creativity aspects, how many people are doing the same exact thing as the person before them, trying to model off that person's success? I don't mean to get deep, but I start to look at it a little bit closer. Like, I'm finding value in a lot more things I necessarily wouldn't have given the time of day, only because I took a shot in trying to enjoy something that I necessarily never thought I would enjoy.
But also, I think we perhaps narrow down, and even I was doing it a few minutes ago, we narrow down the idea of creativity, I tend to do, to the arts and literature, because that's what I'm interested in. But, you know, without the creativity of scientists, about whom I know practically nothing, you know, you and I wouldn't be sitting here talking to each other across half the world with lights on and computers, and we couldn't do that without scientific advances. Scientists are creatives as well.
I think we choose to categorize creativity, like you said, the arts or literature, is I think that's because it's the most attracted to us. It's the most, like, for me, creativity would not only be paintings or even a podcast, but music. Music's creativity, movies are creativity, film is creativity, even though, yeah, that is creativity. But the reason why I think of those initial responses into my head is because those are the most attracted to me. Those are the ones I can understand the most. And I think that's the answer to necessarily what might be your creative release. You know, reading a book for a lot of people is a creative release, even though they're just being told a story. It's the same thing as a movie, except you get to watch rather than do a little bit of reading, a little bit more work, I'd say, because I don't think watching really is a lot more work compared to actually reading the words. But each way they paint a picture, each way you receive something from it. So I'm telling you, this should be like a freaking documentary. You see, these discussions should all just be in one giant thing. But that's the thing, is how do we find a way to get someone to take a risk or take a shot out of their comfort zone without being forced? The pandemic forced people to break out of their comfort zone. I don't want to force people to break out of their comfort zone. I don't even want people to have to break out of the comfort zone, but I don't want to shut the door on the initial value of what we assume or lay upon something that we've never given a shot.
You think about, say, the idea of doing a documentary, for example, and there are lots of different formats and ways that you can do documentaries. I'm going back and listening to some episodes of Criminal, at the moment with Phoebe Judge, because I really love her style. If you think about the way that documentaries are put together, you could devise a format for a documentary that potentially could inspire some people to go out and make changes. You wouldn't have to force them or preach at them or anything, but you could potentially inspire people to make changes by the way that you presented the information.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know why this came to my head, but the Rage Against the Machine cover art album. I don't know if you've ever seen that before.
No, I look it up.
It's a monk who lit himself on fire in front of everybody. It's a common photo. Now, you can look at that in two ways. One, he might be a psycho or might be brainwashed in a way. Two is that he was standing for something, thinking that it would have an impact that would last longer than a couple of minutes or a couple of days with some people, maybe even the world. And I think that shows something, because I don't want people to do that, but I'm saying I don't think it should be some type of grand homage to take impact from something. People can pull impact out of the smallest thing. I pulled impact from a butterfly flying across the road a couple of years ago, and I was like, that's all of us just getting missed by that car that almost hit that butterfly. But then if it would have got splattered, I would have had a completely different reaction. I think if you really truly tried to understand or ask people about their dreams or ask people about their moments in time where they might have felt questioned, or moments in time where they might have been in a weird scenario or been in some type of situation, you get that experience, you can find a way to, if you want to Hollywood it up, because you got to at some points to make it more like it's The Revenant. You know The Revenant with Leonardo DiCaprio? The dude would never got his son killed. There was no child involved. It was the actual story is pretty bland and straight cut. But I would prefer to watch that. But people wanted a Hollywood version, and they got one. I think if you were able to twist a perspective, not necessarily lying about it, but just making it more animated and more kind of drawn out in a way, I think you can find a way to get people to find attention and start to find value in simple parts of their life. Now, the justification a lot of responses I get for my show are, why would you want to talk to me? I'm not that interesting. And I say that you are, because everyone is worth the conversation. And you start to realize that once you start talking and understanding the deeper discussions that you can have, is that everyone is worth doing this. Everyone is worth having this type of art and creativity. And that's what I like to aspire to. But people, like I've had people comment, said, you just talk to interesting people. Well, everyone's interesting. It's that saying, everyone's interesting. It is. But it's about how people are receiving the information and how people are truly trying to process it.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I wonder how you select your guests. Do you select them? How do you select them?
A dartboard. I'm kidding. I just look up certain hashtags, or I see something that piques my curiosity. I think around the time you were on, I was really interested in audio dramas. I was talking to voice actors, and then it evolved from there. You know, our relationship has evolved from there. It's a concept of opening up a door that you might have questions upon, and then trying to decipher if the relationship can evolve from there, which all relationships do. It's about what you choose to. There's people that have sports talk that'll just talk about sports, and that's the only time they met at a party 10 years ago, and all they've ever talked about is sports ever since, because they don't know if their relationship can handle going outside of those realms. They don't know what else they might connect over. And I'm like, well, I think the best part is that your differences probably bring you more together than your similarities. I think that's what's important, is that I will never be able to understand the process of creating an audio drama, because I get the sound effects, but trying to get a person with ADHD to sit and edit that, oh God, that's just too much. Even when I do this show, I just edit a little bit in the beginning and a little bit at the end to add my intro to it and all that. But I think when it comes to like how your mind works and how your mind is being able to create and craft, I think that comes from a deeper understanding, whether it's professional or whether it's your own personal as well too, of how stories are written. The context, the words that you use, not only have an impact into the story, but decipher of where it's going to go. And that's what I like to see, the deeper roots to it. The way, you know, if you're pulling something out of real history, or you're using a history preface to an imaginary character or something that you created, you're finding pieces of actual realistic features to incorporate, but also letting your creativity have its free flow of thought to be able to get what you're trying to envision out of your head. There's billions of things in my head I wish I could draw and I wish I could paint that I can't, but I have it in there. And there's people that I meet that can create the things that I do. Hence, half of my merch is created by Adam. I start seeing that it's not necessarily the weight on your shoulders or the weight of the world on your shoulders. It's the weight that we can all bear. And I'm not trying to turn that into a deep thing, but that's what I'm saying, the conversation aspect of things. You start going down a road, you don't know where it's going to lead to. And next thing you know, bam, left turn.
I think but that's true. You know, you're asking about writing audio drama. And I think, as you know, I don't do the soundscapes. I let somebody who's very clever at that do that. I just tell him what's going on and then he designs it. But I think, you know, when you're the medium that I chose to tell stories happens to be audio drama. Now, I was on a course that was really all around novel writing and poetry, just about exclusively novel writing and poetry, which are different ways of telling a story. And I decided that my stories would be in sound, which essentially for me means in conversation. So my stories are just dialogue. There's only dialogue. And any description that you'd normally find in a novel or that would be seen in a film has to be done in the soundscape. But essentially what I'm looking at is the dialogue. So what you're saying about writing a play from history, for example, the leap that my mind is making, and you know, I'm not alone in this, obviously, I'm not unique in this, but the leap that my mind is making is saying, right, well, here's a figure in history. So we might envisage this figure in, you know, fancy costume like Blackadder or one of Shakespeare's characters. But in essence, this is just a person. And this is a person with all the flaws and problems and, you know, living in the physical world and living within their own mind. And so how does that person think and how does that person speak? And that is what you hope then brings to life someone who exists in a portrait that's probably not even very realistic that you can find in a history book. How do you bring that, you know, really to life so that it sounds like a living, breathing person that you could meet on the street? One of the plays that I have got funding for, I don't know if you knew that, I've got funding from an organisation called Creative Scotland to write three plays based in Scotland. And one of them is about Robert Burns, who is the Scottish poet, Burns Night, January 25th. Most people have heard of Robert Burns. But he was a real person who lived some of the time about 20 miles from me, something like that. And people visit his cottage and they look at the museum and all that kind of thing. But this was a real person. We only really have one portrait of him. And we don't even know whether that's very realistic. But the beauty of that is that I can turn that rather stiff looking portrait that everybody's seen over and over again into a voice, you know, saying things that he really might have said, saying things that he really did say, because I'm using some of his letters to put the play together. But a warm, living, probably quite attractive and flirtatious voice. And so in a way, I can bring that portrait to life just through sound.
Do you find yourself very, I guess, I would say, I'm trying to find the proper word for it. Do you find that it's easy for you to be able to dissect a person's personality and decipher who a person is or individual is? Because I've tried through a lot of my life, like being able to look at social cues or recognition or speech patterns or just the way a person acts, and the way you can really look at someone and truly find their basis if they're being who they say they are, or if they're trying to kind of lead you down, you know, like your kids would. Like, I didn't draw on the wall. It's like, then why do you have that purple crayon in your hand? You know, do you ever find yourself dissecting and trying to understand to a deeper level on some things or why a person does the things that they do?
Quite often. Of course, the beauty and the get out, if you're a fiction writer, is that you can weather a gap, so you can make it up and you can say, well, I think this person was like that. And often people can't really argue with you because we don't know. So you do the research, you read the letters or you read the trials or you read, you know, all the documentation and history books and other people's interpretations. But at the end of the day, it's my imagination that says, I think that this is what this person was like. And yes, you are collecting information, you're collecting, but if it's historical information, so you can't meet that person, you can't judge for yourself what you think they're like, you're secondhand, you know. And then that's where the imaginative jump comes in, and you say, right, I'm going to fill in the gaps on this person. So my Joan of Arc, you know, I don't know what Joan of Arc was like really, but my Joan of Arc in confessional, she's just arrogant in her certainty about what she's doing. And she's feisty, if you like to use a modern word, but she's quite arrogant because she thinks she's right no matter what's going on. And I can do that because no one can tell me any different.
You know what I really appreciate about your creative style is that I also think that you're the type of person who really wouldn't try and make it more entertaining because you know that would be a hit. You wouldn't try and add something that would, you know, would get a lot of attention, you know, would be like, oh, he's the murderer. You wouldn't add that because you have more care into the real context of a situation that might play out rather than adding, oh, they had a super, or they grew angel wings, or they did something that just randomly popped out of nowhere, like every film does, which kind of detracts the audience, but also is the most popular trending thing to get a number one hit. You try and stick more to a story basis rather than relying on cheap illusions. And I think that's very important to a content of someone's character. Like if I was sitting in an office job or office space somewhere, I would hire based upon that. I don't necessarily need a person that's going to feed me what I want to hear. I have a person that's going to give me their own depiction of it, and I can choose to like it or not, but the context of it's not going to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I have a moment sometimes in films or, you know, in watching television, or and yes, that moment comes where somebody grows angel wings or the equivalent of that. And I think, no, you've spoilt it now. You've spoilt it. That was a really good story, and you've become sentimental or cliched, or you shouldn't have put that in there, you know, because it spoilt it. So, one or two of my plays are quite fantasy based in the mild sense of the word, rather than historically based. So I do like that idea, but I don't always want a neat, tidy ending. I love an ambiguous ending. I love leaving the audience thinking, well, did she, didn't she, what happened next? Not telling them and tying it all up, you know, in a neat ribbon and saying there it is and they all lived happily ever after. I find that slightly boring sometimes.
I don't like it when I'm reading or when I'm watching something and my favorite character, the main one, dies, and then you see him come right back. Because I'm always expecting him to come right back. I'm like, what about it just being over? Like, what about that? Like, what happens? Oh my God, I never would have saw that coming. And that was it. Like, is he going to come back? Is he going to come back to the door? And then he doesn't show up. It's like, Yeah, why was I expecting that? I don't watch films to be. I think that's why I like M. Night Shyamalan so much. Like, I don't like watching something knowing that it's going to lead this way. I like being surprised on the aspect of I wasn't expecting that to happen. And I think people are getting a little bit too comfortable with how their films play out. It's the main reason why I don't like the Fast and Furious movies is like, I'm expecting a car to go into space. It's not new anymore. You guys are doing some intense, crazy things at this point. It's like all of it's where do we draw the line at make believe? And I get it. It's a movie. It's going to sell tickets. But yeah. I think that deeper value needs to transition into more of a concerned value in the eyes of the public. And what the eyes of the public is like, to be 100% honest, there's a lot of people that just like listening to shit. I think that's just because it's mainstream, and I'm not going to discern that value because I think every creative work has its aspects to it that are good, whether it's a bad movie or a good movie, even a documentary. But we've just gotten happy with all these movies that have the same template.
Yeah.
It's just like a video game. Call of Duty is the same exact template. Yeah. And necessarily, I want to see something that is – everyone wants something that's new or edgy or different, but do you? Or do you just want something that sells? Do you want something that's going to get your name written down somewhere? I've been watching a lot of interviews and documentaries with scientists and documentaries on murder, documentaries on just manipulational tactics, aliens, and the perspectives, I'm telling you, will truly enrich your mind when you start understanding that the value that you consider to be valuable is nothing compared to the value that this person considers valuable. And there's a deep understanding of what that is. And when I start looking at what's going to be something that would be acceptable for all, what's one thing that everyone could either be happy with or be totally clueless on what the hell just happened. And I think that's valuable to me. Maybe it's not valuable to somebody else, but the fact that everyone can understand that when we watch a sunrise or a sunset, the most important thing of that is that everyone experiences that sunrise and that sunset in such different ways. It's everything that we all can share. We base things on the things that we have. We take pictures of the things that we have. We take pictures on our cars. We take pictures on our boats. We take pictures on our vacations in Tahiti in 2004 that we'll keep sharing on Facebook, or we'll keep rehashing and letting people know this is what happened in my trip 10, 15 years ago. But what about the value of the moment that everyone is experiencing at the same exact day that everyone is experiencing it? And that is the sky, that is the earth, that is the place that we live, that is not our homes, that is the concept of what's outside of our homes, the walls that we have built up around us to keep us safe, necessarily might not be keeping us safe as much as we think so. It might be closing off us. And I think you brought this perspective into my head was today is a sunny day in the UK. Doesn't happen that often. You said that to me that second time we recorded, and I've still thought about it. I was thinking about it today too. I was like, yeah, like you start to understand when I walk outside and it's night and I'm heading to the gym or something, I can smell the air and it's beautiful. And I realize that as soon as I get inside of my house, I'm totally going to forget what this feeling feels like. That's why I've tried to stick a lot of my recordings on one day and then just enjoy my days off where I can actually sit outside and really soak in some sun, or, you know, enjoy the moment or whatever the weather is outside. Because I think you can lose subtle aspects of yourself. And when you start to trace back where those subtle aspects of yourself have been lost, you start to find them in the things that you choose to cut out. And I think the things that we technically choose to cut out might be the value that we discern in objects or discern in environmental things as well, too. I think the environment plays a key factor into a lot of people's happiness.
I think we have to be often reviewing what our lives consist of. Okay. And the reason that I say that is because I am almost retired. My friends keep saying, I thought you were retired. Well, I'm almost retired. I've got a little bit of work to do between now and the end of March. And that's quite a big change in life. So, you know, having worked full time, various jobs, lots of training of people and development in business and all of that kind of thing that really interested me, that I really loved it. And then so gradually there's less and less of that. And so there's more and more of writing. So, for example, today I picked up these papers. Can you see these? Mm-hmm. Very old papers from a castle down the road from me. I'm going to go through these and read some old letters and things and see how I can make them into a play. So that's changed. But also what's changed is the waking up in the morning. You know, instead of waking up, right, I've got to get ready, I've got to go to work, I've got to get in the car, I've got to go through the traffic, I've got to do this, got to do that. That's changed. And so COVID forced us into massive changes, which I think now if we're not careful, we're forgetting some of the good habits that we developed under lockdown. And so I think we have to be always reviewing. And it's great what you said there about realizing that actually being outside is of huge value, because it seems like a small thing to be outside, not inside. Seems like a small thing. You can take that for granted so much so that you don't bother doing it. And I think life is such that we have to be always reviewing, right, where am I now? Like, what are the important things that I need to be doing now for other people, for myself, for the environment? What are the things that now I have time for, I don't have time for? And I think our priorities are shifting. They should be shifting all the time, and we should be looking at them all the time and always balancing them up, always making sure that we've got some kind of balance, however precarious that is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think the things that you think, I think there's a lot to do with moving on, but I think a lot of people choose to move on in some of the wrong aspects of their life. Necessarily, that might be subjective or might be my own personal view on it, but I start to look back on, like, I never thought I would forget what my grandma looked like. Never thought I would forget what my grandma laughed like or talked like. And then as I'm starting to notice more and more, it's getting harder and harder to remember, besides photos and, you know, certain things, because time is healing kind of the wounds that were there. But then I start to wonder, when it comes to something not even as sensitive as that, but what about the sensitive subject of, what does a fire sound like? What does the crackling of a wood log sound like? I can look that up on YouTube, but do I understand what it meant when I actually experienced it? I haven't had a bonfire on the beach in over a couple of years, which makes me start to look through and be like, what are some things that I necessarily left in the past that I really wasn't truly ready to lose yet? And I think those are things that I look at like I lost them, but necessarily I could do that right now if I wanted to.
Yeah.
So I think it's our viewpoint of people think that, oh, that's in the past, that's gone now, there's no time for that. I'm like, there's always time for that. There's always time to do whatever age you are, whatever point in your life that you are, whatever you have going on, there's always a moment. I think our ideas of time is a little bit distorted. There's 982,673 days in an average lifespan of 71 years. So wasting a second of that being miserable or upset with the situation that you're in, when it's so easy to understand that as much as you matter to you, you matter to the people around you. But in the grand scheme of the world, it'll keep rotating, it'll keep moving on. So why would you waste a second of it being miserable on that world that is spinning and still going around? Mm-hmm. And just do what you feel like makes you happy in the moment that you feel like you need to be happy. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about, you know, the bonfire on the beach, because I think we've all got in our lives, we've all got the bonfires on the beach. What was that time when I felt really good? And it's so easy to think, well, that, you know, that was in the past, and not question, well, why was that in the past? Why don't you bother doing that anymore? What's actually stopping you doing that?
Because the sand was immense. Oh, my God.
Well, you wouldn't want a bonfire on the beach here, let me tell you, because you'd freeze to death. Bonfire or not.
It's 50 degrees here, but, you know, it was just that I like the cold. I mean, I'm cold all the time. My heart rate's so low that it barely pumps blood to the lower extremities. So like my fingertips and my toes always get super, like, I think it's like 70 when I check the temperature thing. Then like mm-hmm. the heart and the chest area is like a 90, 89 or something like that. But I always got cold there. But I actually like some of those feelings. Like people like that. I like my feet out of the blankets when I sleep. I like my toes open, but they're always freezing cold. Even like a warm them up, I'm sticking them in the blankets. I like that for some reason. It's different. And I think that different is something that a lot of people can experience, being different in everyday aspects of their life. And I'm not trying to relate my toes being cold to, you know, life scenarios of feeling, I guess, obscure in some moments, but I think that you look at differences and you start to understand that their value isn't being afraid of it or the fact that it's different, but the comfort is the fact that it's different. The comfort in it is the way that your mind will move your hand over your hair without even thinking that you're doing it, or doing something, or you're writing, or you're talking, or you're rubbing your hands together and you're not knowing that you're doing it, because it's just so instinctual and it's so comforting that your mind knows and goes to that. I don't know. I speculate now, but you're staring at me. I feel awkward.
No, don't feel awkward. No, I'm thinking about what you've said, actually. Because how much of what we do by instinct, again, do we observe that? Do we observe how we think? Do we observe thinking that things are now in the past and we can't do anything about them? Or if we don't observe what's going on with ourselves, we can't change it, can we? If we can't see it, we can't change it. And so that's how people get stuck, I think, in the idea that I can't do this, or I wouldn't be able to do that. That's how we get stuck, because we forget to observe, for example, that we have done things in our lives that we're successful at, or we've done things in our lives that if it have influenced other people. And going back to what you said earlier about you've learned a lot from doing these podcasts, I'd be willing to bet that people have learned a lot from you doing these podcasts, but you're not so aware of that. You're not so aware of the influence that you might have had on other people's lives, perhaps, but you are aware of the influence that they've had on yours. And so I think there's a point at which, without wanting to watch ourselves all the time and become horribly self-conscious, it's good to be aware of where our thoughts take us, because they might be holding us back some of the time.
I think you can get stuck up in your head a little bit too much. I started to look at life as kind of like a curtain and has its opens and closes. But the close, I guess the closing part of it, the shade or the dark aspect of it, it seems like it's lingering longer than it usually does. I always have realms of contemplation within myself. I've had since I was a child, mostly because I spent a lot of time alone, whether it's like you're too young to go out to your friend's house or something and nobody's home, so you got to kind of figure your own way out. I think it's a value aspect of it as well, too, because it's caused me to really try and look through a lot of aspects and tackle situations in necessarily ways that I might not have been thinking about it before, at least trying to find a different perspective. And I think that a lot of people might suffer from an identity crisis, or a lot of people might suffer from these lows. There's highs that come with it, but I think that's I don't think it's people are not the issue. I think it's society. I think for me, I'm a peg that doesn't necessarily fit into a hole, but I necessarily don't think that people are all pegs. I think that society just has a way of working that is very, very structured. And I don't think there's a way to really structure people. There's a way to make laws and things of that sort, but you know, people tend to break them. Hell, you might accidentally run a red light. You don't know it, but it happens. But I think it's very strange that if you really think about it, if you think about like we're a ball floating through space that's rotating, and on top of that there's infinite space, and on top of that the infinite space is growing even more infinite, and you're like, what? The way that we have a basic template that people all agree on and follow the exact same way is something of magnificent proportion, where I'm surprised we don't have more incidences of people breaking it. You know what I'm starting to say here is that there's a giant line that we're all walking mm-hmm. and people get shamed for when they step out of it. I'm not associating this with a horrible act. I'm just associating this with being a little bit different. I think the point of this line is necessarily not a straight one, but I think it's a one that has twists and turns. And I think when someone falls out of line, instead of shaming them, or someone steps out or seems a little bit different, instead of looking that like the obscure one and tossing it off to the side, much like when you get those cherry tomatoes, little circular ones, there's that one you know was bad. You're like, I'm not eating that. That's gonna leave that from someone else. But that one, I think instead of tossing that aside, I think that needs to be understood as a different category. I think that needs to be looked at a little bit differently. I think of where we start to consider our value or whatever we start to discern is normal. There is no normal. Normal is an agreed upon way that we act. I think the differences are probably the best parts about us. I think the fact that you think differently than me, the fact that I can get deep onto something and then you can hit me with a different perspective or thought from your own view, that I can take away something from. I think that's the point of communication. I don't know. I don't want to come off as pretentious and I don't want to come off as like a philosophy person, but I'm just speculating. I'm thinking. I'm in the deep realm of thought. I feel like the thinker. Was he thinking about what he was going to eat the next day, or was he thinking about like political elites? I don't know.
Do you think we're getting any better at not pushing aside the people who are presenting in some way as a bit different? Do you think we're getting any better at that?
I think there's a bigger recognition of people that are being pushed aside, but I necessarily don't think that the issue is being tackled properly. I think that if you truly wanted to make sure that people were equal, if you truly wanted to make sure that people felt free, you wouldn't be fighting other people to be able to do so. I think mm-hmm. that our idea of who the problem is necessarily might not be the right one. Mm-hmm. I think people look at it more as like, it's because these people are the one that are holding us back. I'm like, is it smarter to keep a nation divided by having people fight amongst themselves rather than tackling the real problem, which might be a fact that there's something that's keeping them fighting against each other? I've never, ever seen, people fight so much more than ever. And I think that's a concept of misunderstanding of what the real issues are. Is it necessarily you hate this person because the color of their skin, or you hate this person because their sexual orientation, or you just hate the concept of how you've been brainwashed to think that they're unrefutable and they're going to make you change? I think people feel like they're being forced to change, or people feel like they're not being heard. And I think those two things might be sound completely different, but they're the exact same thing, just spun in different ways. And I think that's from a society that wants to find you to pin up against each other. I think we have an unrealistic understanding of each other. I don't know. I'm not Martin Luther King. I can't tell you, we can all join hands. I won't be the first to do that. I'm not going to lead a charge, but I will try and look at everyone's perspective and see that a lot of people think the exact same. And the only people I've never been able to talk to are the ones that talk down to me. If you treat me with respect, you treat me on the same level, then I have no issues. And mm-hmm. I think that's where the misunderstanding starts, is that people feel like they're not being heard enough to where they're tired of reiterating themselves to other people. Mm-hmm. So you might be that first person that they just don't feel like they want to explain it to. They want to talk down to you.
So I think what's interesting about, your concept for this whole podcast, right, is people speaking to people who might be completely different from them, might do something completely different from you. And I think that whole concept actually would be the basis for starting to change what you've just been talking about, which is people being set for whatever reason, people being set against one another, people feeling, alien to one another, or feeling that the aliens are trying to change us, and whoever they are, it's them and us. And I can't help feeling that if people would just sit down in a room from all these different backgrounds, or on a Zoom, and just talk to each other and say, tell me about you. Just tell me about you. Tell me about your life, how you live your life, what you believe, what you think, what your perception of me is and my nation. How does that come across? We don't do that. We don't do it.
I thought about creating an app where you were forced every day, 1 hour, to talk to a random person. Kind of like what Omegle used to be before people just started showing their dong on the video chat. People, man, I don't think there's a way to get people to want to sit and listen.
There are libraries in, I think it's in Scandinavia. There are libraries where you can go and have a conversation with someone who is completely different from you. So from another culture, or maybe a person with disabilities, or you can just sit and have a conversation with someone who's very different from you. I think that would be a fantastic thing to do. What a fantastic thing.
I think it would, but I think their culture is different. I think they're less ramped up in a lot of ways. And I think without an inevitable long 50-year or 60-year process of trying to get generations to think differently, because change from Yuri Bezgaminov, an ex-KGB agent from Russia, he talked about the decentralization and causing a country a war tactic. Was it took a 20-year process of brainwashing a generation to hate the generation before it, and kind of what's happening in the States a little bit and other countries as well too. Instead of it taking 20 years, I think a crucial bigger aspect is, instead of thinking that everyone is the person they need to burn on a cross, I think you need to start looking at some basic fundamentals to realize that to truly want change, you have to change the system. And the system is not ever being touched, because I think it's very easy to distract our attention from the main aspect of things. You know, there was Fauci trending recently on Twitter because of the thing with the Beagles. And then that went away, and it went to people just talking about their favorite thing of Chex Mex. What's the little piece you like out of the Chex Mex? Do you like the cheese cracker? Do you like the pretzel? Do you like this? And I'm like, how is it that easy to distract our attention from something that is horrible that needs to be focused about? It's the same thing with anything political. The main things that you start to see that there are flaws in your system, that's why I get so into it. It's like, I feel like everyone else just like, it's like a kid with keys, but I don't think they're dumber than me. I don't think they're smarter than me either. I think it's a concept of, what do you choose to invest your time in? And I think everyone is so obsessed with trying to capture the spotlight. And I'm obsessed with it too. But I know I'm never going to get it. And I'm happy with that. It actually keeps me striving to want to get it as much as possible. But I think the fact that I'm realistic with the aspect that I probably will never be a Jim Carrey. But I like that, because I think that it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm not valuable. It just means that my idea of value is displaced in something different than what it probably should be. And I am in recognition of that. It's, I don't know. I'm in that weird mood where you're starting to question everything. And I'm like looking at things like, why are there fire alarms? I get it to alert you when there's a fire, but does it make sense how it runs off of a battery that is essentially for this and not a universal one if you really care about fires? No, it's a money thing, maybe. I don't know. But you get down these rabbit holes where I start looking at life a little bit differently. Like, there is a weird thing involved if you really look at the grand picture, much like stepping back and looking at a canvas, that we're all able to function as well as we do. And I'm surprised that there's not more conflicts. I really am 100% more surprised that there aren't just people burning down other people's homes every single day, your neighbors 10 times in a neighborhood. I'm so surprised at that. That means that there's a genuine care in the aspect of another person's life, which I start to really take hold.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that you're optimistic or pessimistic about change?
I'm more realistic, but I think more on the aspect of like optimistic for sure. Hopefully. I was pessimistic for a while because I just saw so much like, oh my God, the government's controlling me. But I think the people are just too damn powerful. I think Lincoln said it best, a house divided cannot stand. Yeah. And so this has been an issue that's been going on for generations upon generations. This isn't anything new. It's the same problem, just it has never been fixed. And you would think that more people would see that it's the same problem and try and find a way to fix it. We fix the minor stuff in the grand aspect of life, you know, trying to make society easier. is just by incentivizing people to give a shit about their fellow person. And I think that comes from a basis of understanding. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think so too.
Could
I
be think so too. Coupons.
I think you should set up a podcast where people speak to people who are very, very, very different from themselves.
Like a Republican and a Democrat?
Yeah.
Good God. I would be a great person to like moderate a debate. I would love it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, great idea.
I'd rather just have a documentary of like showing a different perspective or insight into someone else's mind, or someone could, but it, then it would be hard to get someone who's a Republican to look from a Democrat's angle. I think it's just the basis of the words that we use. It's like texting. If you voice text, it comes off very direct rather than maybe the way it's initially said. And I think that's a, I don't know.
Maybe you should start with something easier than a Republican and a Democrat then.
I can't think of, trying to think of one.
You could start off with a sighted person and a visually impaired person and just get them to discuss how different their worlds are, something like that. Just like walking a mile in somebody else's shoes.
Or maybe Tom Cruise and Leah Remini. He's Scientology, she's anti-Scientology. We get that going. That wouldn't work out either. They're two brash personalities.
Okay, you'd have to pick them carefully.
And like keep all weapons and open flames away from everybody.
Yes. Definitely.
Well, Jill, I really appreciate you giving me your time and giving me your insight on some things as well too. Is there a place where people can find your links? I'll make sure to link it all in the description, but if you want to say your links for people out there listening.
Okay. I think the best place for people to find my plays is on my website, and that is www.jillkorn, that's jillkorn.com. And if they go there, they'll find my plays, they'll find blogs, they'll find the creative team that I work with, and there's a new play coming onto that one very soon.
And is there anything you want to say to anyone out there listening who was just trying to understand what I rambled off with for the past hour?
I think you've got some great ideas, Robbie. I want to see where you go next. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank. Stay tuned for our next episode.